Thanks for listening to the One Voice podcast. It's a safe place for conversation on relevant topics with real life stories to encourage and inspire you along life's journey of healing from sexual abuse. I'm Mary O'Brien, and now Nicole Braddock Bromley.
Well, we are back, and as always, have an amazing guest to share with you today. But this one is actually, and I say a lot of them are special, but this one actually is like probably top tier, like very, very special to me. And I know she's going to be so special to you. So we have with us today Dr. Barnes, Dr. Mary Barnes. She is a developmental psychologist specializing in social emotional development with a specific emphasis on family violence. Her work involved running a supervised visitation center where children from unsafe homes due to substance abuse or domestic violence visit with their parents in a controlled environment. And I'll give you a little hint. I actually worked there in college. Her recent research includes developing and evaluating a sexual assault prevention program for college students and assessing self-care strategies for social service employees working in the area of family violence. So welcome to the One Voice podcast, Dr. Barnes. So nice to be with you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Always good to see you.
Always good to see you. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Well, for the listeners, I just have to spend a little bit of time with you before we actually get into some time with Dr. Barnes. I need you to know that Dr. Barnes was actually one of my college professors. So I met her when I was an incoming college junior transfer, where she was a professor. And I came in as a psychology major. But most importantly for me at the time, I came in as a point guard for the basketball team. But after day one in Dr. Barnes's, I think it was her child and adolescent development class. It was like after day one, I met her and I started to think about life differently. I was like immediately feeling like I am more than a basketball player. I need to begin thinking about real future goals. And it just kind of sparked me to dream, I think, bigger in my life than I really had before. Dr. Barnes was more than a teacher. She was an awakener. And that is the thesis of a speech that I gave at her college last year for her retirement. And I actually, if it's okay with you, Dr. Barnes, I just want to read an excerpt from that before we dive in to your topic today.
Sure. An excerpt.
An excerpt. Yes. So this was from my speech last year, and basically I started off calling you a little badass in psychology. Dr. Barnes was everything I wanted to be.
By the way, several students repeated that after you said
that brings me
I
so
got
much
it from
joy.
A few different students. Yeah.
Well, good, because it's so true. So this is what I said. I've heard it said that teachers who love teaching teach students to love learning. Dr. Barnes inspired that in me, and I was going to milk my time at her college for all I could. I started volunteering, interning, shadowing anywhere there was hurting women and abused children. I got involved at the local rape crisis center, and then Dr. Barnes provided me with opportunities to volunteer with her community organization and to use my experiences there in my senior project. I loved working at the supervised visitation and exchange center. Seeing she could start something so unique like that, meeting a real need in that community, it seemed to give me permission to dream about starting my own thing that could meet a real need somewhere else. So as a 20-year-old student, deep in her own struggles of trauma, healing, relationship issues, brokenness, and searching for purpose beyond my pain, Dr. Barnes helped me to see that I could be more than what life had given me up until that point. She made room not just for me, but for all that I carried. Whether I talked about it or not, her classroom made it safe to bring my whole self. And looking back, I think she saw then what would take me years to see in myself. Dr. Barnes planted seeds and then sits back and with hope watches some of those seeds grow. With time, presence, encouragement, opportunity, those things propelled me into my best dreams beyond college. C.S. Lewis once said, "The task of the modern educator is not to cut down jungles, but to irrigate deserts." Many of you know, I grew up in places that often told young people how to think and act. Dr. Barnes was fresh air, encouraging me to pursue new things, to blaze new trails that were certainly unlike the paths of others before me. She allowed me to stay wild, to remain curious. She didn't tell me how to think, but gave me freedom to take risks, question, and outgrow the places I'd been. And like the quote suggested, she also irrigated deserts. Places where maybe I didn't believe in myself or where I was dried out by my small town upbringing. She irrigated deserts when she ensured opportunities for student voices like mine to be heard and empowered students with agency as authors of their own learning, and she actively listened. What truly sets Dr. Pabarnes apart from others in her field is that she truly sees her students. She sees potential and challenges us to see it too. She has a deep belief that every student's unique, that every student brings their own story and offers something special to the world. And many of you who have heard me speak, you know, I always quote Margaret Mead, the great anthropologist who once said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." Well, I've always thought of Dr. Barnes as one of these, a thoughtful, committed citizen and an empowering educator that continues to change the world. So again, I just want to thank you for being that mentor to me at such a critical age. You were such a hero in my story and really has made an impact, not just on me, but on so many lives that I've been able to touch through my own career since college. I'm always reminded of the impact that people like you make on others as, you know, generations continue. So I just want to thank you for that. And thanks for sitting through that. That was probably uncomfortable.
No, thank you. It was very nice. Very nice.
So it's just so interesting though now, obviously you're coming on here as an expert on a topic, but also as someone who has experienced a very, very hard thing. So all of those years being in college, sitting under you, you're making this incredible impact on all of us. I did not know. And so I really wanted to talk to you about that today. And I'm just so honored that you'd be willing to be vulnerable and share about that. So I don't know where to start, but I guess I want to just throw you the baton and just say, I think it's really brave when someone can be such a leader and be helping so many other people, and yet you're fighting your own wars where no one else knows about. And maybe let's just start there.
Sure. Yeah. I'll just give a little background on why I contacted you last week and said, hey, you know, I think I want to do this after listening to a brief excerpt from a podcast that you were on, where, and I know you talk about this all the time, but just the notion that, you know, one voice, either listening, talking, telling their story can make a difference even if it's just one person, but you reach so many people. And I've always admired the way you've taken your trauma, your story, and changed people's lives with it. You told me your story when you were in college. And I know that was hard for you and you were still dealing with it and figuring out what to do with it and what to do with your life. And you've sort of turned it into your life's work, which I'm sure in many ways has been healing for you, but you've helped so many other people. So I heard that little excerpt last week from a podcast that you were on, and I thought, you know, this is the perfect time in my life, sort of perfect storm to start my own journey in that way, because I did retire last year from my full-time teaching job. I'm still doing some work, but I'm not in person teaching young people. I developed a course in family violence when I came to Marietta College and taught it for almost 30 years. And so I'm very familiar with the research and I believe in the research and I want to talk about that. But I did not feel like it was appropriate to talk about my personal experiences. And by the way, when I first started teaching it, I'm not sure I knew I was in an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And to clarify, I will go into this, obviously we both will, but to clarify, sometimes people are uncomfortable with using the word violence when we're talking about psychological or emotional abuse. I was never physically abused. I was never sexually abused in my relationship. But I definitely was psychologically / emotionally abused. We can use those terms interchangeably, but I didn't feel like I should talk about that. And I still stand by that decision. The classroom was not a forum for me to vent what was happening in my life. And again, to be honest, I'm not sure I recognized it And so I had been teaching the course for several years, and there was more research coming out on psychological abuse. And as I started reading it and absorbing it and making that, you know, a bigger part of the class, it was just ticking off all these buttons like that's me. That's me. That's me. And I felt kind of like a hypocrite in front of the class, you know, because my mission was to help people not get in these relationships or get out of these relationships. And here I was stuck. So when I heard you last week, and I thought, you know, now is the time that I need to maybe get my voice out. And I think being able to both know the research and talk about my experiences could help some people. I also think it might help me. So selfishly, you know, both my children recently have encouraged me. I won't go into too much detail, but to work on myself, that they saw things in me that were still not right and not healed. And, you know, I'm not sure they know where all that comes from. They certainly saw a lot of things, you know, in our home. But I think they encouraged me to do the work. Both my, you know, my daughter and my son specifically said, after a very long, difficult talk, you know, I said, well, so what do you think I need to do? And he said, Mom, you need to take care of yourself. You know, you need to stop worrying about Maddie and me. You need to take care of yourself. And that really hit home. And I know, you know, my daughter was encouraging me to do this, the same thing, and really make some changes to work on myself. So I thought this would be a good way to do it. So I am here today. Yeah. And again, I really want to both, you know, integrate the research, because the more I read and the more I studied, I was like, this so much is me, that, you know, I think it will help people recognize, you know, possibly what's going on in their own relationships.
Yeah. So how long were you teaching about this specific topic before it really clicked for you? You know, and I think about too, like, so many therapists are giving the best advice. Meanwhile, they're dealing with the same stuff in their lives that they can't set the boundary, but they're like encouraging people to set the boundary, the same exact boundary. You know what I mean? Or, you know, get out of this relationship. It's toxic. Meanwhile, they're in it, you know? So I think that just goes hand in hand for so many of us. It's easier to kind of care about other people, even just like your kids have said, caring about our children more than our own, you know, health or things like that. So, but at the same time, not knowing you're in the abusive situation, that's another level, you know, of, for one, I think it's easy to deny it and minimize it, and, you know, as all victims of abuse do. But as you're teaching it, I'm wondering, like, was there a moment where there was like a real light bulb, or was it a gradual ticking off the symptoms?
Yeah, I would say it was a gradual thing. I met my ex-husband when I was in graduate school. So I was just beginning to study all of these things. And initially, you know, it was a developmental psychology program. So it was a pretty broad-based education. And eventually I began to work with my faculty mentor, who did focus on family discord. He referred it to, you know, the effect of anger and tension in the home on children. And then that kind of got me into my own work, you know, looking more at, you know, actual abusive relationships and family violence. Attachment theory has been a big part of my work and study as well. So quick, you know, quick synopsis, basically attachment theory, developed by John Bowlby, a British psychoanalyst, focuses on the importance of the early parent-child relationship or attachment, not in the way Freud did, but basically suggesting that early parent-child relationship helps the individual establish a sense of trust in those who are supposed to love you. And that very much influenced me, because I believe that, and the research bears that out, that those early years and forming that sense of trust is important. So I was studying all of that, met my ex-husband in grad school. We ended up getting married and having my daughter. And so I would say it really wasn't, it was not early in my career that I recognized any of the signs. I probably didn't even, I started teaching the class when I came to Marietta. So it was about, I had taught for 3 years before I came to Marietta. So it was about 5 years into my career. I know I developed the class and really enjoyed teaching it. And mostly I think I focused on, you know, on physical abuse and sexual abuse. There wasn't a lot of research out at the time on psychological abuse. Although, you know, if you're being physically and sexually abused, you're being psychologically abused. So those things go hand in hand. But psychological emotional abuse alone was not really a topic of study. And so it was really, and you know, I would say in the first years of our marriage and when our daughter was very young, he was a very good father to her. He was very involved, stayed home with her at times when he wasn't working, and very involved in her care and was a very good dad. We didn't have a great relationship. I know that now. We never communicated well. If we had problems, we weren't able to talk about them. So all those, you know, those kind of warning signs were there, but basically he was a decent human being and was decent to me and was actually a very good dad. So it really wasn't until I would say about 10 years or so into our marriage, and I was now at Marietta College and I was teaching this course. And as my daughter entered adolescence, my son was, they're 6 years apart, so he was still little at the time. But as my daughter entered adolescence and we were growing older, you know, we were getting into our late 30s and getting ready to turn 40, things really took a turn. And I won't go into all the reasons I think that happened, but people changed and it turned into a not so great relationship to a really bad relationship. He was not very involved and not kind to my daughter anymore. My son was still fine because he was a little kid. I know you have teenagers. So they change, right? And your relationship has to change with them and you have to be ready to handle them seeing you as people and challenging you. And none of that went very well. And increasingly,
so kind of the control, then that's when that started. Losing a little bit of control can maybe trigger somebody towards that.
Exactly. I think it was the interaction of that and the fact, and there is actually research. I was just doing some reading on this and I had not seen the statistic previously, but there is research that when and by the way, always want to say men can be victims of any form of abuse as well. I'm talking about it from a woman's perspective. But one of the statistics that really stood out to me was that about 65% of the cases of psychological abuse alone, so not the other forms of violence included, but psychological abuse, where you have all the signs I'll talk about, occur in relationships where the woman is more successful, where the woman has a more successful career, where the woman is the primary breadwinner. That was definitely the case for me. And I always suspected that was a problem. I think it made him feel insecure. And again, you're sort of losing that control. He didn't have any kind of power over me in that sense, in a way that many men do. Even still in relationships. But definitely, yeah, I think losing my daughter, you know, gaining her voice, which I'm so glad she has, and she has a strong voice, and I'm so proud of her. That was not okay with him, and me becoming more successful. I was doing new things, starting, you know, things like the Visitation Center, publishing articles, and had won a teaching award. And I was doing, you know, great in my career, and I felt great about my career. I think things really began to dwindle from there. And that's when more research was coming out about psychological abuse. And I started to really be, you know, reading that and then saying, yeah, this is happening to me. And this isn't okay. And I know it's not okay, but I don't know what to do about it. So I would say it was, you know, sort of into my late 30s and definitely my 40s. So I had been in my career for, you know, 13, 14 years, something like that. Maddie was now, my daughter was a teenager. Ben was still pretty little. Things were really bad. And it was really hard to, you know, as you said, go in the classroom and try to, you know, do a good job and try to give everything I could to my students, because I was not happy, extremely unhappy at home. And also, again, felt like I'm a hypocrite. Like I'm telling all these, you know, kids to stay away from everything that I'm experiencing. And really the biggest, and jump in anytime if you want me to hit on something specific, but the biggest things that I experienced, biggest forms of emotional abuse were demeaning. My ex-husband would constantly demean me, both, you know, when it was just the two of us, but also in front of other people, make kind of sarcastic jokes and put me down. And then there's the sort of, you know, reworking that to make it seem like the gaslighting strategies, where it's, oh, I was just kidding. You're so sensitive. Everyone else knew I was kidding. So there was a lot of demeaning, putting me down. There was definitely revisionist kind of psychological abusers tend to reinvent the story, reinvent the narrative. So something that had happened, you know, when I tried to process it with him and say, hey, you did this, or, you know, this happened, and I wasn't
so you
okay.
would confront him sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. And he would say a completely different form of, you know, what had happened. And to be honest, I believe he believed it. Like,
yeah.
He really believed he hadn't done what he had done, or that I was
Did
seeing
it sort of change your mind? Were you like, oh, maybe, did you
it?
gaslight yourself?
Yes,
Maybe he is remembering
absolutely.
it right and I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope people listening out there who are experiencing this, like, I really began to question myself. I began to be like, is it me? At that time, too, there started to be a lot of flirting with younger women. You know, suspicions and later confirmations of infidelity that got twisted on me, that I was jealous, I was insecure, that's why I thought this was happening. And believe me, I spent, you know, so much time saying, is it me? You know, am I unattractive? Am I getting too old? And, you know, he doesn't want to be with me anymore. Or am I just, you know, not lovable? He would basically say, you're so stressed all the time. I, you know, I don't want to be around you. And partly that probably was true. I felt like saying, I'm super stressed because I'm working a whole lot and you're
Yeah.
not.
And being treated like crap here. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was definitely the demeaning behavior, and then the gaslighting and reinventing the narrative in a way that made me think, am I wrong? Am I crazy? Am I not a good wife? And so when that starts happening, what you start to, and there was also a lot of tension going on between particularly he and my daughter at that time. It happened later with my son as well when he reached his teenage years. But with my daughter at that time, and so you start, both for myself and for her, one of the main things we see with psychological abuse is managing. And what that means is, you hear the term walking on eggshells. So what you're trying to do is structure the environment, manage the home in a way that doesn't trigger him to be angry, or him to, you know, go off on my daughter or say something mean and get angry to me. So I started trying to do that.
Do you notice that in yourself, where you're like, I need a new game plan to
Exactly.
protect us?
Yes. And I definitely felt like I didn't like being leaving them alone with him, because I didn't know how it
Yeah.
would go. I would try to like make sure everything was managed at home, like dinner and shopping and, you know, kids stuff, so that he didn't have to deal with that, because he would get angry and you know, get upset with me if there was too much he had to do. And then the other part of that you start doing, which is in all the literature, and these were the triggers when I start reading these, I'm going, I'm doing that. The
Oh,
other part
wow.
is, it's called altered identity. And you start to try to change yourself, because you think, you know, well, this is what he doesn't like about me. So if I change this, it'll be okay. Things will get better. So one of the biggest changes is I stopped speaking up. I stopped giving my opinion. Specific example, not just about something he had done or anything, but if I disagreed with him about politics, literally, if I didn't like a movie that he liked, if I disagreed with him and spoke my you know, opinion, spoke my mind about it, he would get really upset with me. So I stopped having a voice. You know, I just wasn't going to, I wasn't going to trigger that. So I became this very sort of passive person that I would say I'm not aggressive, or, you know, I never over people or anything,
but you're becoming what he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And I
small,
silenced my
quiet
voice. Right.
Yeah.
So that altered identity is a big part of it.
What's interesting to me about that, though, is I almost feel like you could then show up at work as your true self. Was it like a safe haven for you at work in that way? Because, you know, I'm picturing you had to have this altered identity once you went home. And I mean, you walked home most of the time. So I'm just picturing like you leaving the campus, walking back to your house and becoming another person to keep him happy, to help the family survive, and then coming back to work the next morning. I imagine you're able to like remove this cloak, this mask, and just be yourself. Was that the case?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's many people at Mariana College who would say I didn't have a voice.
Exactly.
I was very vocal in faculty meetings. I spoke my mind. I said what I thought.
That's why I called you a little badass in psychology.
Yeah. I had no, you know, like at the visitation center, you saw me with clients. I had no problem being just respectful, but being assertive. And I was like two different people, and I felt really good about myself at work. I felt like I had a voice, and then I had to silence that voice. Now, I do want to say, I don't know if my children will listen to this, but if they choose to, you know, I always loved them so much and enjoyed every minute of them growing up. And I'm thankful that even though it was painful in our home at times, I had wonderful times with them. And I know that I had that love and that voice with them, and I was able to show that. I don't think it affected my ability to be loving to them and to enjoy every moment of, you know,
them. I would not question that. You always talked about them with the deepest of love. They were your number one. They were your everything. They were your why of what you were doing.
Yeah.
And you also were so loving and caring towards them that you picked the best babysitter on the planet.
Yes. Ben still remembers McColl. He couldn't see your name. He's just, hey, McColl.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, there were good things in my life always. And I don't want to take that away. And it wasn't that every day was awful in my home, even with him, but there were really painful periods. And the third thing that was absolutely true, probably the worst part, I can take being put down. I don't like the fact that I gave up my voice. I still have guilt about that because, and I've recently said that to my children, like, there are times I wish when he was being unkind to them, I wish I would have just screamed at the top of my lungs and grabbed them and left. And I regret some of that. I was afraid to do it, not for myself, but I was afraid it would get worse.
And you know the research with that also, because a lot of times it does. I mean, that you could have done what you wished you had done, and it could have ended up way worse for any of the three of you. And, probably knew that.
I did. And I also knew the law wasn't on my side in the sense that, you know, I had never been hit. I had never been hurt physically. He had not hurt my children physically. So had I chosen to leave, he certainly would have had partial custody, shared custody. And I was
Which
terrified.
You also knew that stuff in and out.
Yes,
you knew all the things. Which kept you more silent. It only makes sense. It's that way that we survive because we know so much. And we're just, it's almost like, well, maybe one day we'll figure out how to safely get out. But until it's safer to just be the one that absorbs all of this.
Yeah. And for me, it just, you know, knowing the law, that there's no way he was going to lose custody over psychological abuse. I was terrified of the fact that they would, you know, I didn't want them to be alone with him for a weekend or a week or whatever, you know, custody issues would have would have resulted. So for me, it wasn't an option. It wasn't really safe for me until they were grown. And so I left when my son was 18. And it wasn't like, I didn't absolutely have that planned. I knew I was going to leave at some point by then. But then that, you know, at that time, my son was having some significant issues, and his father was really not kind about that either. And that was just my final straw. But they were both adults. And while I was married for 25 years, I don't think I've said that yet, but it was 25. Wow. I got married at 25 and I left at 50.
Wow.
Yeah, it was my entire adult life. And so peeling that back and getting rid of it, I've been divorced now for 10 years. That's still with me because I think it was just such a, you know, part of my, it was my entire adult life. But I'm thankful at least my children were able to make their own decisions about seeing him and how they navigated all that. And they did, they were not forced to, they were not, it was not up to me. I didn't have to protect them. You know, they were able to make those decisions.
They were adults. Yeah. I was wondering, you know, obviously, you know, having taught about sexual abuse and physical violence, domestic violence, all the things. So oftentimes the abusers are kind of good sometimes. And it really makes you question that. Did he have those instances or did it get so bad there was never any kindness ever?
In the beginning, certainly. You know, I would say knowing the I am to tell your listeners, I am remarried now. And to a wonderful person who is super kind and loving, and it's the opposite. Like, honestly, I can do no wrong. I wish, you know, I don't even think he sees all, you know, all crazy flaws that I have, but now knowing a healthy relationship, I can look back and know that we never had a very good marriage, but definitely when my children were little, our children were little, he was a pretty good dad and we had some good times and he could be good to me. I would say by the last 5, 6, 7 years, those times are over. It just, there had been too much pain, too much, you know, too much, you know, abuse of me, you know, definitely unkindness to them. Infidelity. There just had been so much that the last years were just extremely painful. I did want to say the third thing. So I talked about like the managing and the altered identity and the definitely gaslighting and reinventing the narrative. But the main strategy that he used to control me and to hurt me is referred to as withdrawing or withholding, which is basically the silent treatment. He could go weeks, months with barely talking to me other than like, are you picking up, you know, Ben from practice, or are you walking the dogs this morning? Like, other than like immediate communication we needed to have about our animals or our children, or, you know, literally would not talk to me. We did not sleep in the same room. We did not speak to each other. If I would try to say like, this is painful, can we please talk? And honestly, there were times I didn't even know what happened. I didn't even know what I had done that had upset him.
Oh, so, which would make you even more crazy. Like, what did I do? What? Who am I?
I would come home some
days. I'd almost want a reason.
Yeah, I'd come home some days and not, I'd be like, okay, what am I going to get today? You know, and that was probably the most painful part because you're just living in a house with someone that really won't, not only isn't loving to you, but like literally would not speak to me for very long periods of time. And that was that kind of silent treatment is incredibly painful. I would have rather been yelled at. And I know I said to this when we talked earlier, it might sound strange to some listeners, but I think for people who are, I know there'll be some who are in my, the situation I was, I honestly wished he would have hit me because I think I would have said, oh, that's not okay. Like, I know that's not okay. I know that's abuse. I can get out of here. But everything else I was constantly questioning, like, is it me? Why is he upset with me? What did I do? Why isn't he talking to me? Did I really do that? You know, am I insecure? Am I jealous? You know, I was constantly questioning myself.
Oh, I have heard that from so many, especially survivors of like narcissistic abuse. It's just like, it's so crazy in the mind, in the home, in the way the interactions are. And so many have said the same thing. I wish he would just hit me, or she would just hit me, so I would have something to prove to other people this is messed up.
And I haven't used that term yet, because both gaslighting and narcissism are so commonly used today. But when you really see it, you know it. I mean, we all try to fool ourselves at times, or we all want to be right, you know, a lot of the time. So certainly there's pieces of that in our personalities all of the time. But you mentioned like control earlier was an issue when he lost control. And I absolutely believe he is a complete narcissist. He could never be wrong. He could never not be in charge. He couldn't be questioned. And I think at the heart of that has got to be these complete insecurities. But what the narcissist does is makes you crazy. It makes you really feel like there's something wrong with you. And I felt that way for years and years and years. It took me a long time to get to the place where I was like, no, this is him, and I need to rescue myself and get out of this. And when I did that, you know, again, it was 10 years ago. When I did that, I was very proud of myself for getting out, because it was hard. Even when my kids were gone financially, you know, 25 years of marriage, it was very difficult. And I was really proud of myself for doing that. And then I sort of just let out this big sigh, like, I'm gone, it's over, everything's great. And my son started having some problems at that time as a young adult. And so I was very preoccupied with trying to help him. But also I just like buried it. I was like, I'm done. I'm good. Yeah. I got out. And it's really only, and this is a conversation I've had with my children recently, like, I'm just starting to realize, because I'm like, I started thinking a couple of years ago, like, I have a great marriage. Everything's wonderful now. Why do I still have nightmares about this person? Why do I still feel, you know, question myself in the way that, you know, he would make me, you know, feel demeaned or whatever? And I think takes a long time to get yourself back, and a long time to process. You have to process what happened first, but then it's been like a journey of trying to get back who I was before, before I went through all this with him, who I was as a person. And I actually will tell this story. We talked the other day, and I said I wasn't going to say it, but I think I can say it without getting upset. My husband now and I were going through, this was when we were first dating, probably dating about 6 months or a year or something. And somehow we were going through old photo albums, and he came across a picture of me that I was about 20. So I was in college. It was before I had met my first husband, and I was at a tailgate at both brothers went to the Naval Academy. So I was at a football tailgate, drinking a beer, having a good time. And it was a totally candid photo. Like, whoever took it, I didn't know they took it. And it's a great photo, and I look really happy, and I know I remember that day, and I was having a good time. He found it, and he was like, oh my gosh, he said, this is such a beautiful picture of you. He's like, can I have it? And I got really upset, and he thought I was upset with, I knew I wasn't upset with him, but I didn't know what was wrong. And I got really upset, and I think started crying, and just, you know, no, I don't want to see that picture. That's, and what I realized was I had to process it. And I thought about that night, and I was like, it hurts so much to see that girl who, like, I am not anymore. Like, and obviously I'm a lot older. I'm okay with being old, but I felt like, wow, you know, that girl was loved as a child. I had great family relationships. I was doing great in college. I had all these dreams of, you know, everything that was going to happen. And it wasn't I wasn't hurt in the way that I had been so hurt for all those years. And I thought, I don't even know who that person is. And eventually I gave him the photo and I apologized and said, you know, I'm sorry, I got upset. I said, just, it's hard for me to think like I was that person and I lost that person. And now I have to get him back.
Yeah. Now you're on this journey of really recognizing and having compassion for her that the next 25 years would be taken.
Right.
But then also this journey of reclaiming her because she is still you.
Yeah.
She's still in there. Yeah.
And for people listening, you know, there are early signs, you know, the red flags that we talk about and we teach about. And I would say if you're experiencing those in an early relationship, run, get out. So if you've got someone who's, you know, love bombing you and wants you, you know, wants commitment and don't see your friends, we need to spend all our time together and all that's happening, you're starting to say, I'm not, you know, I'm super infatuated with this person, but I'm not comfortable with that. Get out before you're too deep in it. For people in my situation where you're have children and you're, you know, in a long-term marriage and everything, if you are feeling no one in a intimate relationship, you know, personal, whatever, romantic relationship, no one should make you feel bad about yourself. That person should be the person that makes you feel great about yourself. And I know that now. And I think, you know, I began to know it. But if that person is making you feel bad, it doesn't matter. Don't worry about being too sensitive. Don't worry about whether there's something wrong with you. That's not the person for you. Because if there's something wrong with you and your partner loves you, they'll talk it through with you and they'll help you. And you'll figure it out together. They won't make you feel bad about yourself for any flaws that you have. So don't question yourself. Don't let people, you know, revisit history and gaslight you and say things that make you question yourself. No relationship should be like that. It should be supportive and loving. And if there's a problem, you should be able to communicate about it. And if none of those things are happening in your relationship and you're starting to really feel badly about yourself, you know, it's not you. It's that person and it's that relationship. And if you can safely, and not, I know it takes a lot to leave, believe me, but if you can get out and get out safely, you know, it's not you. It's something that, you know, you have to get out of that relationship as soon as you can and start to reclaim yourself.
Okay, I just wanted to pause a moment to tell you about this community called Unleash that we keep referring to. If it sounds like a secret club, that's because it is. But if you're a survivor of childhood sexual abuse or sexual abuse or sexual trauma of any kind, you are personally invited. Unleash is an 8-week e-course. It features film, storytelling, personal contemplation exercises, and my favorite part, a safe online space where we meet virtually in small support group settings led by myself and other trauma experts where we openly discuss this lifelong journey of healing from sexual abuse. It's kind of like a book club, but like a really precious one. A place where questions are welcome and your story, as much as you feel comfortable sharing, is safe. Maybe you've experienced some healing, but you long to be unleashed. I hope you'll consider joining us. Each group is limited to 8 survivors, so head over to our registration page now and grab a seat. The website is iamonevoice.org/unleash. And by the way, if you aren't interested in the support group part, but you want to just work through the videos and the ebook content at your own pace, we have that option too. It's right there on the website as well. This road of healing can feel pretty long, but we don't have to walk it alone. That's why we're here. And I hope you'll join us at one of our upcoming groups. More info at iamonevoice.org/unleash. Gosh, can we talk about that? The escape, the getting out? Like, what did that look like for you? And, you know, would you recommend that method or some other way for those listening that they're like, I am in this relationship right now.
Yeah.
Now, how do I get out?
I think that's
maybe really, start with your story.
Yeah, I think that's really a personal journey because number one, if there is any threat of physical violence, we all know that threat significantly increases when the person tries to leave. So you have to have a safety plan and you have to be working with professionals to really, you know, store up your funds, know where you're going, have a safe place to go. I didn't have to worry about any of that. He was never going to be physically violent to me. That would have been too easy. That would have been a loss of control for him. So I never feared him physically. So I want to say that right away. I don't want to encourage anyone who has that threat do what I did. But I literally just, it was after a weekend, my son had been home and he had been very unkind to my son. And he was away at college, but he had been home, was having some medical issues and was home. And he had been very unkind to him. And that was it. I just literally, as we were driving, I drove him back to college and I told my son that I was going to leave. Super supportive and just held my hand and then I told my daughter, and then I just went to him one evening, like a couple days later. He was eating the dinner that I made, and I said, I'm super unhappy, I'm depressed, we don't have a relationship, so we're nothing more than like housemates, and I want to get out. I want to leave. Or I don't know exactly how I said it.
Yeah.
I think I said, I'm going to leave. And he just, I remember specifically, he said, you go be happy. That's what he said to me. You can go, you go be happy. And so it was very clear to me, I was leaving. And I knew just the way he was, if I had asked him to leave, I don't know what that would have looked like. And even if he had, it would have taken, a year or something. Cause he was in a nice, comfy situation financially and with my, my career and my earnings and everything. I just knew he wasn't going to go anywhere, at least not quickly. And it was going to be a battle. So I left and I literally moved out of the house within a week. I found a house to rent, took very little, took some special things of my kids that I wanted to have, when they came. And my personal stuff and not much else. And I got out within a week. And that was my journey, my choice. I had to get out once I.
Yeah. Wow. That. And there was not much pushback or trying to control the way you did it.
Nope. Never fought. The meeting was easy. He never fought with me about anything. We had four dogs together. I'm a huge dog lover. And I thought that might be the crux. I think the thing that might spark them,
because you were hardly taking anything. He got the house, he got his life.
True. Nothing was really changing for him. He did agree to let me. I took two of our dogs and he was okay with that. I will tell you, the only time that the first time he got upset was when I told him that I was filing for divorce, because I think he thought I was going to leave, but nothing was going to change. I was going to keep up the house and nothing was going to change for him. And I do think probably in his head, because I had taken it for so many years, he thought I'd come back. And I'm not sure he thought I was serious. But I probably a couple weeks after I left, I texted him and told him I had gotten a lawyer and I was going to file for divorce or dissolution basically. And then he got really angry. And never confronted me. I mean, honestly, he never, my mom, your mom thinks you're the greatest, of course. And she's like, I just could never, like, didn't he come over and say, please come back, I love you. And like, no, mom, like, he didn't love me. And we were so far from that. Like, no, he didn't care that I left. I think the only thing he cared about is that, it did eventually change his situation. He had to sell the house and his life did change. That's all he cared about, but he didn't care that I was leaving. So in some ways, my leave journey was much easier than for many people.
My
kids were adults. I was stable financially, and he was not, physically violent or threatening in any way. So other than, he definitely sent some bizarre texts and emails and things to my family, to my kids, to me. There was
safe
that kind
base.
Of strange stuff, but the leaving wasn't too difficult, to be honest, and it was a huge relief. Again, almost too much, because I thought it was all over, you know, and it just wasn't, because I wasn't myself yet.
I'm wondering, you know, did you ever feel, even now that you're out, maybe more now that you're out, the stereotypes of the different forms of abuse? You know, you did say, like, I wish he had hit me, blah, blah, blah. Like, do you ever find it hard to even talk about your story and, you know, this type of abuse with other people? Because I do think there's a lot of still misunderstanding. Like, when I talk about sexual abuse, I always say no one was talking about sexual abuse when I was a kid. So I didn't have language to go with it. I didn't really know. Like, when I did hear something about it, there was no way it was happening at home like mine. But I feel like there's a lot more talk now about sexual abuse, mm-hmm. sexual assault, mm-hmm. things like that. But psychological abuse, that's still something that's not really discussed. I feel like people would look at you and think, there's no way.
Yeah, and that's, I know I mentioned to you in my conversation, another thing that kind of sparked me wanting to talk about this was a friend, kind of a new friend who I like very much and getting to know, and she didn't know any of my past. And so over time we've been, you know, talking about our lives and our past, and I told her some of this, not everything I'm sharing with you, but I told her some of this. And her reaction was like, I can't believe that. She's like, you're so, you know, intelligent and successful and confident. Like, I can't see you in a relationship like that. And you know, I know she didn't mean it in the way I felt it, but there is an embarrassment. It makes you, that I have a lot of shame connected to it, that I let myself be treated that way, that I let my children be treated that way. And, you know, yeah, I'm Dr. Barnes. I'm this successful, you know, professor, and look at everything I've done. Like you said, the two lives before. And yet I let myself be treated that way for years and years and years. And her reaction is very, very typical, because we tend to stereotype who does get abused, whether it's psychological, physical. We think it's someone who's vulnerable, who's uneducated, who's unintelligent, whatever, or who's come from a bad family, you know, something like that. And none of those things were true for me. I'd like to just hit on that point. If you're in it, don't, the worst thing you can do is make yourself feel worse, because this can happen to anybody. I did come from a healthy childhood. I had everything going for me. And I just met someone who I got infatuated with, fell in love with, whatever. I didn't see all this coming. I couldn't have seen it coming. There's no way. My brother has said something to me that always, I have two brothers, but my little brother, that has always really made me feel good. He married his college sweetheart right out of college. They went to different colleges. They had a long distance relationship, never near each other, lived together, got married at like 21 or whatever. And he has always said to me, he's like, Mary, he's like, it's dumb luck. He's like, they're still together 35 some years later and happy as can be. And he's like, we hardly knew each other. You know, he said, you grow together and it works or it doesn't. He's like, you didn't know what you were doing. You were 20, you know, whatever. This was your first serious relationship. You dove in and it didn't work. Don't blame yourself. And I would say that to anyone who's listening.
Yeah.
You know, it can happen to anyone. And hopefully it's just, you know, an unhappy relationship. You just end up going in different places and don't love each other, or it doesn't work. But it's a different thing when it's abusive. It really is. I believe in marriage, and I would have stayed with my first husband, even if our relationship wasn't great, even if, you know, he wasn't super loving or we didn't have great communication or something. That wouldn't have ever made me leave my marriage. It was the pain, the constant pain and the abuse that was going on, that was just not tolerable for me, or allowing my, you know, children to me innate or allowing that to happen to my children, even though, again, they were adults. I just could not be with this person who had treated me this way and had treated them that way. And so it can happen to anyone. And that's all the important thing is to recognize, you know, is this happening to me? And if it is, what steps can I take to get myself back and get the strength to get out of it?
Did you ever have anyone maybe notice some of this stuff? Maybe when you were in it and just like maybe concerned? Or afterwards, actually, I know I did after you shared with me a year ago about some of this. I said I remember coming to your house for Thanksgiving one year because I couldn't go home because of basketball, and you took me into your home and your family, and I just remember thinking, this dude is not good enough for her. That's all I remember thinking. But to be around him more, I just wonder if there's any people in your life that, looking back, they're like, oh gosh, yeah, I saw it, but didn't really know what to say. Or did they say something?
My family definitely did not like him. We had very tough, you know, family moments, not all of them, but, you know, he could say very inappropriate things. He would say demeaning things
in front of my family.
And my family was like, what? Like, you know, we love her. We're not going there, you know? And so definitely my family did not like him. And I think suspected things were not good, but they never said anything to me. And we've processed that since. I never said anything to them because I felt like until I leave, I'm not going to tell them everything that's happening. And then we're going to go home for Christmas or something. And, you know, so.
Yeah. And you have military brothers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My older brother was a Navy SEAL. He ended up being a Navy SEAL after the Naval Academy. And he definitely had that, you know, I know that was his reaction. Like, I'm going to come down there and beat his. And I'm like, no, you're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. I'm safe. I'm out. But so yeah, definitely they suspected things were not good. You know, I think I respect that they allowed me to try to make it work. They're all super happy I'm out now, and they love my current husband, and family gatherings are wonderful now. And I had a few friends. I definitely had two. I have two close friends here, like childhood friends, whatever, wouldn't have known. But I have two close friends here that I confided in. And they were the ones I really confided in and talked about what was happening because they weren't family and I could tell them what was going on. And they were great. They were both very supportive in the sense of like, no, that's not okay. But they were never like, you got to get out. Like, you got to leave him. They kind of let me do the work myself. And both of them were so supportive when I left. Literally one of them, her daughter helping me move out, you know, and her poor little 12-year-old daughter's like, Mary, you have too many clothes. they spent like a weekend helping me move out. And her husband then came with his truck and took the little furniture that I took. And so I did have a few friends, but after now I've had so many people, even like people in the psych department, be like, yeah, I kind of your reaction, not that they knew I was super unhappy, but like, I never really saw it. Like, I didn't see it with him. It didn't make sense to me.
He always seemed a little off. And then just like he just seemed like you would have been with someone way more like kind and like just really celebrating you. And he was just kind of like not just a background person, but it was darker than that.
And I'm not
but
sure.
It would never have been something that you would be like, that's not okay. It was just more like
people wouldn't have known that, but they will say, you know, Dr. May, Dr. Sabicki, I think I can mention them. They were you know, are part of our department that you knew at the college. I don't know if you had Dr. May, but they have all commented like, you're just so much happier now. You're a different person. And many people have said that. So I think I am getting back to myself and having my voice and being able to enjoy the day.
That little Mary at the tailgate with the beer in her hand.
Yeah. She
She's
had, you know,
slowly
great things
emerging.
in front of her. And so, you know, some of them happened, a lot of them happened, and I need to
Right.
focus on that. It was just, you know, the one part of my life that was not right for a very long time. And having the relationship I have now has just it's just been such confirmation of how bad it was, because I now know what a healthy, loving relationship is. And that, you know, that means the world to me, because I said to myself when I left, like, I may be alone the rest of my life, and that's fine. Like, I was totally fine with that. You know, I'd rather be alone than be with someone who doesn't love me and doesn't treat me well at all. Much rather be alone, and I was okay with that. And I just got lucky, and I met the one sweet, kind man in Marietta that was single. So I got lucky, but the contrast is, it's amazing to me.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm so glad that you have found that and he found you and loves you the way you deserve. I just look at your relationship now and it almost seems like it's somehow multiplying. Like, do you know what I mean? Like 1 year equals five for you guys. And it's
Yeah,
almost like making
like dog
up.
years, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's almost like
That is
making up
true.
for those 25 that were taken from you that,
Yeah,
you know, you didn't deserve.
I was 54 when I married Sam, so I'm hoping I make it, you know, 20, 25 years would be really nice. But you're right. We have to make every day count, because we definitely only met later in life. And I was so touched when I remember when you were coming to campus. And you didn't even know I was divorced or anything. We hadn't had contact in a while. And I told you I was remarried. When I told you who I was married to, and Sam had been your athletic trainer. And she's like, "He's so nice." And I said,
He
"Yeah,
was always
he
so
is.
nice. I'm like, that
He
only makes sense. Yeah.
is." That's what everyone says. He's just, yeah, he's the sweetest. He's the nicest. So I
Yeah.
was glad you knew him. I didn't know that he remembered you, but I didn't know he had been your trainer or anything.
Oh, yes. Lots of ankle tapes.
Yeah, so kind of full circle, it's crazy.
So how does that affect your relationship now? Do you find it kind of, you know, for everybody listening who's a survivor of abuse, I feel like we all know we don't want it to affect our good relationships, but it does in ways, and it's important to talk about it and to have a patient person that is trauma informed in some sense. Like, how does that kind of come up for you guys, and what do you do to work through that?
It definitely did at first, because I think I spent the first 6 months or so waiting for him to be mad at me. I just
Yeah.
assumed that was going to happen. I was going to do something silly or, you know, whatever.
Wow.
And a specific experience I remember is we went to a Halloween party. We were just dating, like a couple months or something. And we went to a Halloween party with a bunch of my crazy friends. And we were getting pretty silly. You know, I had a bit of wine and nothing. We weren't out of control or anything, but we were getting kind of silly, and I acting up, and we got home. He drove. We got home, and I said, you know, are you mad at me? He's real quiet. Sam's always quiet. He's quiet, of course. And we started talking, and I said, are you mad at me? He's like, no, why? And he was kind of taken back. I said, I don't know. We were getting a little goofy. I just thought maybe you were embarrassed or something. He's like, Mary, he's like, you could like throw up in the middle of the floor, and I'd just pick you up and clean it up and take you home. He's like, I don't care. You know, it was like, you could do anything. I'm not gonna, but I did feel like that, like something's wrong. He said, well, I'm gonna do something and he's gonna be mad at me. And how am I gonna handle that? And it just never happened. So, I mean, not that we've never had disagreements, but they're valid. It's never been some random thing that I've done.
Yeah, where he's just
So.
gonna get mad at you out of nowhere and you feel like, what did I do? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So
that probably really helped you relax in that relationship
yeah.
more.
So at first that I would say it did. And yeah, it just affects now. I still have nightmares, which is crazy. It's 10
Yeah,
years
you
later.
mentioned that, and I actually did not know that. Yeah. So is that happening quite a bit?
Maybe like once a month I have them, and it's always the same. I'm stuck with my ex-husband, usually at the old house, and I know in my head I'm not supposed to be there, and the house is always a mess. It's like the shambles, and he's there, and I know I'm not supposed to be there, and I keep trying to tell him no, I'm with someone else, but like I can't find Sam, and I can't convince him that I'm not supposed to be there, and then he gets kind of scary and mean, and it's the same dream. It
Wow.
you know, transforms a little bit, but a lot of times I'll wake up kind of crying out. Sam has to wake me up because I'll cry out in my sleep. So that's weird. You know, 10 years later, why am I still having dreams? Which tells you, I guess I'm still, you know.
Yeah.
So just I think in terms of my confidence, my mood, my ability to cope with stress and things like that. Those are all things I'm still working on because I had some unhealthy coping strategies for a while and, you know, still working on those. So I think
Yeah.
it affects me, and me obviously affects him. But I would say it doesn't at all harm our relationship because he's very understanding about listening, or you know, if I'm going through something, we just kind of work on it.
Yeah. I hate that, just the consequences of, you know, abuse in our life. And even when we're out, even when we're doing all the right things and working on ourselves, like it still kind of pops up from time to time, and there'll be some random trigger that we weren't expecting, and
Right.
it's just so hard. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the shame. And I know I'm holding on to you for extra long here, but it's just that I really feel like there's so much here that's going to help so many people, because it's so relatable. But the shame, I feel like with all forms of violence and abuse, it's debilitating. And that in and of itself can alter our personalities, I think, even when we're carrying that with us. And it also manifests physically. Like I have so many people who feel like, you know, they have physical ailments because of this, the PTSD, you know? Yeah, so just like, what have you found or heard that has been the most maybe helpful, freeing, like lightening the load for you? Is it just being able to talk about it? You know, I think that definitely helps a lot of us, but wondering what else.
You know, I think, and this is kind of sad to say because again, it was 10 years ago, but I think I'm just working on it. I think I'm just getting there. I think,
Yeah.
you know, when you like you get to this safe space, and I was out and I found Sam and I was happy and we got married, and you know, my son's doing well now, and you know, that's only been that was a very difficult time. So I would say it's been like the last 2-3 years that everything's cool, everything's good. And weirdly, that's when you, for me at least, maybe that's not everyone's experience, but when you get to that safe space, that's when you start to feel it. That's when I really started to look back, which
Yeah.
is like, I'm okay now. Why am I?
Yeah.
Almost like I had the ability to let out that big sigh and say, oh God, like all that happened, and why did I let it happen? You know, it's like I'm comfortable processing it now, and I'm really just the last couple of years dealing with all the painful stuff. And there are triggers. You know, there are triggers when I remember a certain event and I feel super angry at myself for not standing up to him. There are women that still live in town that I have to see, that I know he had some kind of relationship with. You know, it was never fully disclosed to me, but you know, a few he admitted, and I have to see those people sometimes, not a lot, but that triggers me. Like, why didn't I just get out then? You know, so I
Yeah.
think I'm just kind of allowing myself the space to deal with it. And again, my kids have said to me, you know, Mom, you got to work on something.
Yeah.
I used to, I'll be perfectly open with this. You know, I used alcohol. I drank too much wine for a while when I was going through all of this, and certainly some of the issues with my son caused me a great deal of anxiety, and that was my coping mechanism. And that's something I, you know, I'm ongoing, you know, working on. So I think I'm just kind of doing it.
Which is wonderful.
Right into therapy and processed it earlier, but I didn't.
It would still come back up. You know, yeah. it is lifelong. The healing journey is continual. It's not like, oh, we had done it then, now we don't have to do it now. No, you still need to do it now.
Yeah. I'm just kind of in this safe space where I can work on me. And like, you know, as I told you, Ben said, Mom, you just need to take care of yourself. And I think it is that time in my life. I wanted to share an anecdote with you, just because you can put it wherever you want in the, but I didn't say it earlier, and it just to sort of hit home for people if they are in this kind of relationship, the gaslighting and the revisionist history that occurs, because I mentioned seeing some of these women in town. There was one specific situation where I confirmed and had found out that he had been with another woman, and he admitted it to me. And he literally said to me, I will never forget it, his exact words were, if you did something like that, I'd have to take a look at myself. Basically, if I have to interpret that, saying to me, like, I did this because you're inadequate. So you better figure out why this happened. You better change something so this doesn't happen again.
This is your fault.
This is your fault. And that is the classic, you know, turn the victim into the, into the offender.
That's disgusting.
I remember just at the time thinking, like, did you really just say that to me? I don't think I said anything. I just couldn't believe it. And, you know, for anyone in that kind of situation, if someone does something awful like that to you, I mean, you know, infidelity is awful, whether it's emotional, physical, whatever. When you're in a long-term committed relationship, it's incredibly painful. And for him to turn that on me and make it seem like it was something about me, that is the classic, you know, psychological abuser. I can do whatever I want because everything's your fault. And wow, you know, I just wish I would have taken those moments and screamed or ran or, you know, done something to get myself out of there, but I didn't.
Well, I think a lot of the healing comes, at least for me now, of looking back on those times where you have regret or you think you could have done something different, or, you know, even where you use the language of, I let this happen, like, it should never have happened in the first place, you know, those kinds of things, but also just like showing compassion to those experiences, to ourself that went through that experience of like, you should have never been treated like that. We're like, look at how strong you were to be able to survive that. Or, you know, look at how you were still able to be so professional. You were such a good mom, and yet you were dealing with this, you know. I feel like the compassion and all of those experiences, when you go backwards and you're triggered, you see one of those people that reminds you, like, to have the compassion for you. I think that has been really healing for me. And then too, as I'm hearing like you talk, I'm reminded also of like how important it is to love yourself the way you should have been loved those 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I feel like a lot of times there's a lot of healing for other survivors to be able to be for themselves what they should have had.
And
it's, to me, what you're doing. It's what you're doing, and you're learning a little bit of it through Sam.
Right. But the person in, you know, you said this to me the other day, and it's true. As good as our relationship is, he can't fix that. I have to fix that in myself. And you're right, like, flip it and don't say, why did I let that happen, and feel angry at myself. Maybe say to myself, that happened to me, and I kept going, and I kept functioning, and, you know,
I eventually got out. I do think that that language shift is really important in placing the anger where it belongs, you know, like don't to not be angry at yourself for not doing this. Like, I'm mad because I was ever in this because of that person.
And that's actually, I would teach that in my class. It was really important for me to get the message that abuse, we do it, I think most vehemently with victims of sexual abuse, but you know, sexual assaults and things like that. But it happens with any form of abuse, we blame the victim. And it's like, well, just leave, right? Or why did you let that happen? Why did you get so drunk and go back to the room with him? Or, you know, why didn't you just leave if he was that awful to you? And it's the one crime where the victim gets blamed. If your house gets robbed or something, you don't get blamed for that. But this is the one, you know, real crime where we get, and unfortunately, psychological abuse is not criminal. There's nothing you can do in the system to deal with it. Again, that's why victims sometimes are like, please just hit me, do something that I can do something with legally. But anyway, it's, you know.
That's what makes them even more scary, is they can take it to the edge and not go over.
Yeah, there's nothing, and you know, my ex-husband never would have lost that kind of control with me, because there would have been consequences for that, and I think he knew that. But yeah, so that's a big part of healing, and that's still something I'm working on. Like, stop blaming myself. Could I have made different choices along the way? I could have, but I think I did the best I could at the time. My children were always foremost in my mind. Like, what decision I make, how is it going to affect them? If I leave, how is it going to affect them? If I stay, how is it going to affect them? You know, and it was a constant battle. Like, what's the right thing? What's the right thing to do? And I tried to make the best decisions I could. And a lot of the not standing up for myself was because I was managing the situation and trying to not make it worse. So yeah, I have to forgive myself and
That's what I was
realize
gonna say. I wonder
everything
if
that happened was never, it was not my fault. Was I the perfect wife or whatever? No, I'm not now, you know, but no one has the right to treat you that way. And that's all on that person. However I responded, there is nothing I did to deserve that. And that's true with a victim of any form of abuse.
And now it's just the job of like letting yourself off the hook for the things you might have done differently if you had been in a different situation, or or if you could go back.
And I think when there are children involved, it's just, it's so much harder. I would have been out of that relationship pretty quickly, I think, had I not had children.
I believe that.
And yet
that
I can't,
makes it so
you know,
hard.
I can't regret having the relationship because I have my two beautiful children. So it's like this weird, you know,
my gosh.
I will never regret that. So I can't go back and wish it didn't happen, because then I wouldn't have met him then. So it's a weird feeling. But yeah, this has just been super helpful, because I think I mentioned to you, you know, I've gone to therapy and you talk about all your, but for me, I guess, having been a teacher, and you know, it helps me to think maybe this can help someone else. So
there's no doubt that that's happening. You know that, again, this is so relatable for many, and just knowing that there's someone else who's gone through this and is healing on the other side, I mean, just that alone, I think, helps many others. And then also, you know, just watching you, as I like to say, like a wounded healer, you know, someone who's leading and at the same time, like, has the limp, you know, that you're dealing with on the side, but can still show up for students and for other people in a way that no one would have ever known, you know,
no, I don't think
because
so.
You're not bringing all of that stuff in with you. You're showing up for them, and you're working on your own stuff apart. And I know probably some people would say, well, that's not showing up authentically you. To me, that is so respectable. Like, when I show up in my therapist's office, I do not want to hear about her life.
No.
So in the same sense, I just think it's so admirable, and I just have the biggest respect for you for how you have really mentored many people. I mean, you were the greatest mentor me at such a critical age in my life for me to be able where I am today. Like, I don't think I would have ever launched my own career. I wouldn't have thought of myself in the way that I do now to be able to believe in myself, to be able to have a voice. So it's just amazing to me where you were maybe without a voice for a period of time, yet giving a voice to others simultaneously.
Yeah.
Like, how
Maybe
amazing.
maybe it made me better at my job. But you know, I was, you said that at one point, but it was a relief often to come in and you know, do my work and feel like I'm doing a good thing for people, and I was good at it and I felt proud of it. And I think that kept me going quite a bit, and then being able to enjoy my children. But yeah, I always felt good about my career. Never, that was very separate for me. And I kept going, and I think doing a very good job despite everything. And I'm proud of that. And I think it helped me in some ways. I had a piece of my life, you know, to feel good.
Well, I'm proud of you for getting out.
Yeah, me too. I can't imagine my life, if I hadn't. I don't know where I'd be today. So
Yeah.
very
And
thankful.
that matters to me more than your career too, for the record. Because I do know you're much happier, and I believe that you'll find your way back to the tailgate.
I'm
And
getting
can I join you at that tailgate? Okay.
yes, you may. We can
Because that's
tailgate
actually my
together.
dream.
I just have a few more wrinkles, but I can still tailgate.
Well, same. Same. Well, this has been such a joy to me and a treat. So thank you. Thank
Me
you
too.
for being willing to share, and not just being the genius expert, but being willing to be vulnerable and share your own struggles and a lot of your, you know, experience is horrible. I wish you'd never gone through that, but I'm certain that other people will find a lot of hope and relate. So thank you.
I hope so. And you know, after it airs, if people contact you and there's anyone I can help, I'm more than willing to talk to people if that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for letting me do this. Thank you. It was good for me.
Good for all of us.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe, write a review if you heard something you liked, even invite others to listen so we can be on this healing journey together. You can check us out on Facebook or go to iamonevoice.org.